Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 394, The Battle of Men with Hill, Signals Intelligence in the September 11th attacks. This is being recorded on January 12th of 2003. For the Record show is being archived by WFMU. Newer programs streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery, DaveEmory. Longer shows, or older shows for download only on a longer URL linked not only to the WFMU.org/Dave Emery website, but to the For the Record section of the Real Audio Equipped Spitfire website at SpitfireList.com. Also in the Spitfire website, detailed annotated descriptions of the For the Record programs, as well as descriptions of the other material available from Spitfire archive shows, lecture tapes, etc. Now, in analyzing what I call the Battle of Men with Hill, an intelligence conflict of incalculable geopolitical and historical significance, in my opinion, we've been talking about the German/EU assault on the vital Men with Hill listening station in the United Kingdom and its associated Echelon network, and analyzing this very important attack by Germany and the EU in terms of a geopolitical strategic struggle that I think will embrace and much of the 21st century and determine the course of that century. And I believe that Al-Qaeda and related Islamo-fascist and secular Arabo-fascist elements are quite literally a proxy military force being used by the underground Reich to destroy and or subjugate the United States. Now, in For the Record 166, the excerpt that we heard in Side 1, we heard about not only Germany's preposterous scapegoating of the Men with Hill and Echelon network for Germany's economic problems, basically the upshot being that economic espionage conducted by the U.S. was responsible for Germany's economic problems. That is, on its surface, preposterous, but also noting the Free Congress Foundation's assault on the Men with Hill Echelon situation at the same time. I believe the German/EU attack and the Free Congress Foundation's attack in the similar time periods is very much representative of the attack by the Underground Reich using its Al-Qaeda operatives and also using its consummately powerful fifth column in the United States, including an especially the Bush administration. By way of indicating the more or less overtly subversive inclinations of the Free Congress Foundation, again, the organization that was using civil liberties to trumpet its attack on Men with Hill and Echelon, a very good indicator of the Free Congress Foundation, which, by the way, we talked about in For the Record 367, was carried in the San Francisco Chronicle of Sunday, January 5th of 2003. This article is by John Wildermuth of the Chronicle. Its headline, State GOP Official in Racial Controversy. And it deals in part with a piece written by a member of the Free Congress Foundation. And again, if this is an organization that sounds like it's concerned with civil liberties and the integrity of American democracy, guess again. A 1999 newsletter published by a man looking to lead California's Republican Party included an essay suggesting the United States would be a better place if the South had won the Civil War. The piece, by William Lind of the Free Congress Foundation, was included in a GOP email newsletter published by Bill Back, B-A-C-K of Yuba County, who is currently vice chairman of the state Republican Party. Skipping down, Lind's piece suggested that it was Reconstruction, not slavery, that really damaged race relations in the country, and that economics eventually would have eliminated slavery even without a war. Quote, it's not hard to believe that history might have taken a better turn, unquote, if the South had won the Civil War, the piece said. If the South were a separate country, it continued, quote, at least part of North America would still stand for Western culture, Christianity, and an appreciation of the differences between ladies and gentlemen. Unquote. And again, the Free Congress Foundation with very strong connections to the Underground Reich. I think the attack by Free Congress Foundation, coordinated with the German EU assault on Echelon Menwith Hill, is altogether significant for reasons I have delineated. Now, bearing in mind the characterization which I have given in numerous broadcasts discussing Echelon and Menwith Hill, and where I characterized the German/EU attack on it as being, in effect, an act of war in the information age, and every bit as significant from a strategic standpoint as the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. Again, a statement I first made in For the Record 119 in December of 1998, after what I have characterized as a cross between the Reichstag fire and the attack on Pearl Harbor, that characterization in For the Record 344, 45, and 46. After September 11th, once again, the Echelon Menwith Hill listening station and a very significant German misdirection ploy with regard to Echelon Menwith Hill, I think further focuses attention on the significance of that institution, and meaning Menwith Hill, and what I have termed the Battle of Menwith Hill. And again, from a geopolitical and strategic standpoint, I believe that the German/EU/Free Congress Foundation/Underground Reich assault on Menwith Hill and Echelon is altogether significant. This is an excerpt from For the Record program number 331. This was recorded in October of 2001, a little less than a month after the September 11th attacks. What we're going to do now in connection with the September 11th attack, and bear in mind that we haven't got the time to go into all of these connections at the length that I and listeners might like, but I refer interested listeners to other broadcasts on this subject. What we're going to take a look at now is some of the German connections to the September 11th attacks, and again, I believe that the Underground Reich, involving intelligence elements associated with German intelligence dating all the way back to the World War II period, at least in a bureaucratic, inertial sense, and operational elements dating back to the long association between U.S. intelligence and Middle Eastern governments, including the Saudi-financed and Grand Mufti of Jerusalem-founded World Muslim Congress, an Islamo-fascist organization heavily involved with not only international fascism and the Underground Reich, but with the Afghan support effort that spawned Osama bin Laden, World Trade Center 1 attack mastermind Ramzi Youssef, and also other Islamo-fascist terrorists who had their genesis as warriors with the Afghan support effort. And again, it should be noted that, as we will see, many of the most important evidentiary tributaries run through Germany. Now, in numerous past broadcasts, I've talked about the Echelon Network, which is operated by U.S. intelligence and by British intelligence, and the vitally important Menwith Hill listening station in Yorkshire in the United Kingdom. I have stated in the past that I do not hold a brief for any abuses committed by either NSA or British intelligence or Echelon or Menwith Hill, but nonetheless, those installations are vital to U.S. intelligence, and I have cited the heat being put on Menwith Hill and the Echelon Network as in all likelihood resulting from or stemming from German intelligence. And this is, in my opinion, an attempt to not only discredit but also to hamper U.S. and British intelligence gathering. This is, like in my opinion, the September 11th attacks, an extension of the combat of World War II with what, for lack of a better term, could be called Germania versus Anglo-Saxonia. And For the Record program number 182, excerpted in For the Record program number 329, we talked about some of the Wahhabist and bin Laden-connected elements operating in oil-producing areas of the former Soviet Union, such as Dagestan, and that could be thought of as the Eastern Front. What you saw on September 11th could be considered the Western Front, and I think on the balance, the bin Laden Islamo-fascist connection, which aims at not only annihilating Israel, but driving the U.S. and Britain, particularly the U.S., out of the Middle East, that could be thought of as Africa Corps 2. And I believe that it is a Yaqiist third position fascist phalanx, which is aiming to do what there simply were not enough German troops to do in World War II. The Yaquiist reference is a reference to the vitally important and brilliant work Francis Parker Yaqui, Dreamer of the Day by Kevin Coogan, whom I've interviewed many times on this program. And I think his book is essential for understanding the events of September 11th. This should not be misunderstood as constituting an endorsement for the working hypothesis I'm presenting in this series or in these broadcasts by Kevin Coogan. That goes for all other people whose work I have accessed. This is my analysis. It is their original research, and I submit humbly to the work that they've done, and that's why I'm accessing it. This should not be misunderstood as an endorsement on their part for the work that I am doing. Now, I think not only in terms of the Saudi behavior in connection with the events of September 11th, but also a very, very interesting article that surfaced in the German press coming from German intelligence sources and pointing a finger in the direction of the Echelon network. As I have stated in For the Record program number 326, I believe that elements within the U.S. intelligence apparatus did have advance warning of this attack, but that in fact elements of U.S. intelligence were subverted by other elements of U.S. intelligence that in fact are allied with the underground Reich and are aiming at not only overthrowing but destroying the United States and annihilating Israel and pushing the United States out of the Middle East. Now, note the following article. Research credit on this is to a member of the listening audience. This comes from the website www.infowar.com/class. This is an article by Ned Stafford, S-T-A-F-F-O-R-D, of News Bites at Stateline Frankfurt, Germany, September 13th of 2001. It's headlined, Newspaper, Echelon gave authorities warnings of attacks. Now, note not only the continuing German attempt at discrediting Echelon, but also impugning U.S., British, and Israeli intelligence, and, by extension, I think, deflecting the blame. There's a principle in law called consciousness of guilt. And I think from a counterintelligence standpoint, the application of consciousness of guilt to the article I'm about to excerpt is very, very significant and more than a little damning with regard to German culpability in this incident. This article reads in part, U.S. and Israeli intelligence agencies received warning signals at least 3 months ago that Middle Eastern terrorists were planning to hijack commercial aircraft to use as weapons to attack important symbols of American and Israeli culture, according to a story in Germany's daily Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, or FAZ. By the way, that is Germany's most prestigious daily, sort of the German equivalent of the New York Times. Now notice the source for the FAZ article. The FAZ, quoting unnamed German intelligence sources, said that the Echelon spy network was being used to collect information about the terrorist threats, and that UK intelligence services apparently also had advance warning. The FAZ, one of Germany's most respected dailies, said that even as far back as 6 months ago, Western and Near East press services were receiving information that such attacks were being planned. Within the American intelligence community, the warnings were taken seriously and surveillance intensified, the FAZ said. However, there was disagreement on how such terrorist attacks could be prevented, the newspaper said. I wonder whether perhaps between the lines that was a reference to the fifth column that I've been talking about. Now, note again that Germany's most prestigious daily, the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, the FAZ, quotes unnamed German intelligence sources as saying that, surprise, surprise, the Echelon network was had advance warning of this, and I don't know whether that's true or not. Again, I think the indications are that elements of U.S. and British intelligence had advance warning. That's quite possibly also true of the Israelis. But reading between the lines, with German intelligence in effect putting the whammy on U.S. intelligence, continuing their propaganda assault on the vitally important Echelon network and Men with Hill, which I have endorsed before, while again condemning any abuses of that. Again, that's a technology. It's like a jet airline. It can be used to transport people or as a weapon of mass destruction. It depends on the usage. I have also pointed out that there is a greater threat to the individual privacy of the average person who submits a urine sample to somebody, to a company for which they are applying for a job. There's DNA in that urine, and that becomes their property. Note, also what the European Parliament report on Echelon had to say. And again, this is very important to consider in connection with the article that I just read about German intelligence attempts at deflecting blame onto the U.S., Britain, and Israel, and the Echelon network in connection with this event. This is from the New York Times of Thursday, September 6th of the year 2001. In the World Briefing section, we find the following article by Suzanne Daly of the New York Times. It reads, it's titled, Report on U.S. Spy System. Now listen carefully what the European Parliament report on Echelon had to say. The United States-led spying system known as Echelon can monitor virtually every communication in the world by email, phone, or fax that bounces off a satellite, the European Parliament was told. But in reporting on a year-long study of the system that was prompted by concern that American companies were using data from the system to gain a competitive edge, Gerhard Schmidt, a German member of the Parliament, said that many European countries had similar abilities, and that the very high volume of traffic made exhaustive detailed monitoring of all communications impossible. Well, if many European countries have similar abilities, what is the high-tech intelligence center of Europe? Well, that, of course, is Germany, which raises some interesting questions about German failure to anticipate this very attack. And again, I think a counterintelligence application of the legal principle of consciousness of guilt comes in very, very handy in terms of ascribing responsibility for this incident. And again, I believe that lies with the Underground Reich involving elements within the Bin Laden organization or perhaps controlling the Bin Laden organization, the Saudi milieu, the Bush family, the Underground Reich, and all of the elements that I have delineated in connection with that. The following article is from the Financial Times of Thursday, September 27th of the year 2001, about the German role in the Al-Qaeda Bin Laden network. We excerpted this article in For the Record program number 329. This is by Hugh Williamson in Hamburg. It's headlined, Al-Qaeda Group Has Strong German Support Network. It reads in part, Germany has long been an important base for the Al-Qaeda movement of Osama bin Laden, the chief suspect behind the September 11th attacks on America, according to terrorism experts and intelligence officials involved in monitoring extremist groups in Germany. Quote, within continental Europe, Al-Qaeda has its strongest support network in Germany, unquote, says Rohan Gunaratna, G-U-N-A-R-A-T-N-A, a terrorism expert at Scotland's St. Andrews University who has studied the network closely. Again quoting, they have been active for at least 6 or 7 years, unquote. That talking about bin Laden networks in Germany. More about bin Laden networks in Germany, also from the Financial Times, this of Friday, October 12th of 2001. Article by Hiba Saleh in Cairo, headlined, Egyptian Terror Cell Linked to Bin Laden. And skipping down, a 32-year-old Libyan man arrested on Wednesday in Munich is the alleged link figure between at least two European cells of supporters of Mr. Bin Laden, writes Hugh Williamson in Berlin. Lased Ben Henny was arrested on an Italian arrest warrant on charges of belonging to a criminal group, document falsification, and involvement in illegal people smuggling, according to Italy. Skipping down. The German chief federal prosecutor's office said yesterday Mr. Ben Henny had also been under investigation in Germany since at least April for alleged links to a separate Frankfurt-based Al-Qaeda cell known as the Meliani Group. Why didn't the German equivalent of Echelon pick this up? Same question in connection with the following article, also from the Financial Times, this of Tuesday, October 9th of 2001. This also by Hugh Williamson in Berlin. It's headlined, German Inquiry, Berlin Demands Boost in Terror Probe. And this reads in part, the German government has demanded the investigation into the country's connection to last month's terrorist attacks in the U.S. be stepped up. The demand was made after a crisis meeting in which government ministers criticized the head of the investigation for not pursuing the alleged terrorists energetically enough. Skipping down, speaking of German chief prosecutor in the case, K. Nehm, N-E-H-M, in addition, Mr. Nehm's office has been accused of ignoring evidence gathered by the police before the attacks, which suggested that Islamic terrorists were operating in Germany. Mr. Nehm's spokeswoman has previously said the evidence provided earlier by the police had not been sufficient to start an investigation. Now, in the context of the geopolitical struggle between the Underground Reich and its proxies and the United States, I want to recall the Serpent's Walk scenario that I've discussed so many times in the past. You just heard an excerpt of For the Record 331, recorded in October of 2001, after, in effect, the Pearl Harbor attack. And that was called Walkin' the Snake, and that reference is to Serpent's Walk. In Serpent's Walk, the summary thesis of what is purported to be a novel, I believe it's actually a blueprint, is discussed as follows. This book was published by the National Alliance, the most important domestic Nazi group in the U.S., and the back cover describes this book: "The good guys win sometimes. Not always, of course. They lost big in the Second World War." By the way, parenthetically, the American Civil War as well, according to the Free Congress Foundation. "That war was a victory for communists, Democrats, and Jews, but everyone else lost, including millions of GIs who were told that they were killing Germans and Japanese in order to make the world a decent place for their children to grow up, only to see things in America go from bad to much, much worse in the decades after the war. Even when the bad guys win, they sometimes grow careless and later become losers. Look what happened to the communists of Eastern Europe in the 1990s. Could the same thing happen to their erstwhile World War II allies in America? Serpent's Walk explores that possibility. It assumes that Hitler's warrior elite, the SS, didn't give up their struggle for a white world when they lost the Second World War. Instead, their survivors went underground and adopted some of the tactics of their enemies. They began building their economic muscle and buying into the opinion-forming media. A century after the war, they are ready to challenge the Democrats and Jews for the hearts and minds of white Americans who have begun to have their fill of government-enforced multiculturalism and, quote, equality, unquote." Now, in this book, in addition to buying into the opinion-forming media, the Underground Reich infiltrates the U.S. Army, and after a biological warfare attack, a bioterror attack on the United States using genetically engineered microorganisms, which destroys much of the United States, including most of the areas that were won by Al Gore in the 2000 election, martial law is declared and the Underground Reich takes over the United States. Now, again, for people that find this account to be utterly, my hypothesis to be utterly preposterous, bear in mind the numerous broadcasts in the past in which I've talked about the Underground Reich heritage and the Third Reich heritage of the Underground Reich connections and the Third Reich heritage of Saddam Hussein. Note that as we are poised at the brink of war with Iraq in January of 2003, a number of interesting things are coming to the fore. The following is from the Washington Post of December 26th of 2002. It's by Graham T. Allison, who was Assistant Secretary of Defense in the Clinton administration. It's called "Unprepared for Smallpox," and it reads in part as follows. "Despite claims that it has enough smallpox vaccine on hand for the entire U.S. population, the Bush administration has announced a limited program of vaccinations. It has decided to limit them to about 1 million military and selected healthcare workers in the first iteration, and then 10 million emergency workers in a second round. Confronting high-confidence intelligence findings that Saddam Hussein has smallpox that could be released in American cities in retaliation for U.S. attacks that might begin next month, the administration displays a caution about defending Americans at home that contrasts sharply with its readiness to attack adversaries abroad." Then after discussing the replenishing of smart munitions in anticipation of war in Iraq, the column goes on, skipping down. "In contrast, the Department of Health and Human Services has contracted for supplies of new smallpox vaccine that will, if they meet current schedules, be delivered in sufficient supply and licensed by the Food and Drug Administration for all Americans sometime in 2004. The chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Bob Graham of Florida, has estimated the likelihood of an American-led war on Iraq in January or February at 70%. Imagine Hussein responds as the latest recently declassified national intelligence estimate predicts he is, quote, likely, unquote, to do with a biological attack on Americans. who believes that the newly established Department of Homeland Security will be able to provide early identification of the virus, supply vaccines to hospitals and schools across the country, or administer vaccines to 280 million Americans. The public health debate has treated this issue as if he were preparing for a distant hypothetical. But the new information about Hussein's capabilities makes it clear that a period of maximum danger lies not years, but months away. Should Hussein take a page from Tom Clancy's novel Executive Orders and dispatch operatives to a half dozen American cities with perfume bottles filled with smallpox to spray in shopping centers? How bad could it be? Were this to happen early next year, the dark winter war game organized by some of the nation's leading think tanks last year offers clues about likely consequences. That scenario ended with 3 million Americans infected, 1 million of whom died. How likely is such an attack? Obviously, no one knows. But America's best intelligence analysts offered their judgment on this question in the latest National Intelligence Estimate on Iraq. Only after a positive vote in Congress authorizing use of force against Iraq was ensured were the relevant portions of this estimate declassified. Its conclusion is chilling. In a classified Senate hearing on the estimate, Senator Carl Levin, Democrat of Michigan, pressed the question. If we initiate an attack, and he thought he was in extremis or otherwise, what's the likelihood in response to our attack that he would use chemical or biological weapons? The senior intelligence analyst answered, pretty high, unquote, skipping down. September 11th, 2001, shattered America's illusions of vulnerability, or so we tell ourselves. Taking seriously our vulnerability at home to biological attacks by Hussein or Al-Qaeda should not counsel cowardice or inaction. It should, however, remind us of the wisdom of the Boy Scout motto, be prepared. The urgent question about smallpox is, are we prepared? And indeed, I think the Battle of Menwith Hill, as I've called it, the struggle about Echelon and Menwith Hill, was part of this second Pearl Harbor, a Pearl Harbor involving subversion from within and a situation that places the United States, in my opinion, similar to that of France in the period leading up to and in the early stages of World War II. The For the Record programs are being archived on Real Audio by WFMU. More recent programs streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emory, DaveEmory. Older programs for download only on Real Audio at a longer URL linked both to the first WFMU URL and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at SpitfireList.com. In addition to detailed annotated article-length descriptions of the more recent For the Record programs, the Spitfire website has descriptions of all of the programs and material available from Spitfire. Stations that wish to air the For the Record broadcast should contact Spitfire at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005, or by email at mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com, and the For the Record broadcasts will be sent to them free of charge. This concludes For the Record 394, The Battle of Menwith Hill, Signals Intelligence and the September 11th Attacks, being recorded on January 12th of 2003. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.